Welcome to the Rooney Report. Today we have with us Emily Albrecht, who's the Director of Education and Outreach for the Equal Rights Institute. Emily, thanks so much for being with us.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me today.
Well, good. Emily, let's start out. You know, I read about you, how you went to St. Olaf here in Minnesota, and you experienced, I don't know if I'd call it a hatred, but a dislike, right?
Toward, yeah, a little hostility towards
hostility.
Pro-life people, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I think I really want to compliment you on kind of taking that hostility and changing it into kind of a mutual respect, or maybe for our audience, if you could share, you know, what happened, and also just, you know, why you got so involved.
Absolutely. So I had always been pro-life, but I never got involved in really any sort of pro-life activities until I got to college, because I walked into a culture that was overwhelmingly pro-choice. I mean, just to paint a picture for you, in the fall of 2016, the local pregnancy center to St. Olaf, the Northfield Women's Center, they were hosting their annual fundraising banquet, and they actually decided to do it on my college campus. They like rented out a ballroom. You can do that on college campuses, right? So they rented out a ballroom, and when the students on my campus found out that that was happening, they managed to organize an insane number of students to basically line the hallways of the whole student union with signs screaming at the mostly elderly, if we're being honest, members of the community that had come to support these free resources for pregnant and parenting people in the community. Like, that's what I walked into. And it was my one strong Catholic pro-life friend that kind of jarred me to say, we need to do something about this. You see what's happening on our campus? We have to step up. And so I joined the pro-life club with her. We had a very tiny, basically dead pro-life club that was being single-handedly run by one senior girl. She was like one woman pro-life show. And we tried to do some stuff that spring as a little pro-life club that, if I'm being honest with you, it just failed epically. Mm-hmm. We put up a display one week that spring semester that was vandalized 13 times in 1 week.
Wow.
And when I say vandalized, I mean like it was destroyed.
Yeah,
we had to reprint
yeah.
the display and put it back up 13 times. And I would submit these reports to our administration telling them that this was happening and asking for their backup, and nothing happened. I mean, I think my reports basically went into a black hole. I don't know if anyone ever read them.
Right.
It was this extremely frustrating experience. So that's what I walked into.
Yeah.
And ultimately what inspired me to get involved in actually trying to reach pro-choice people, because that's what my work specializes in. We're a pro-life apologetics organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dedicated to trying to help pro-life people more effectively reach pro-choice people where they are and help them to change their hearts and minds about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So I got involved with that work because I was seeing a campus that desperately needed to hear the pro-life message, but everything else we were trying wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And so we needed to figure out a way to have individual conversations with students, to get their walls down, because they clearly weren't reading our display, they were tearing it down.
Exactly.
So how do I get them to actually hear this message? And that, quite frankly, came from the existing materials that my organization, Equal Rights Institute, had. I discovered them the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of college and realized that this organization was basically providing the game changer that I had been looking for my club. And so I took my tiny club through Equal Rights Institute's online training materials in pro-life apologetics, and we went out and started doing outreach on the campus. And what I mean by outreach is we would like set up a table in the student union that would have a question on it. It would say, should abortion remain legal in the US? And trust me, students wanted to voice their opinion on that question, we had students that would come up to us literally by the hundreds, and we would start engaging in one-on-one conversations about abortion with these students, to the point where my senior year came along. I mean, we'd been doing this almost weekly for 3 years at that point. And we saw a complete culture shift.
That's amazing.
In how the students viewed us. Like, we had been having these conversations and breaking down walls and causing not only pro-choice students to change their minds and become pro-life, we saw that happen many times, but even more importantly than that to me is I saw that pro-choice people were now open to the pro-life position. The entire campus was interested in hearing what we have to say. We were given a space, and people not only respected our right to have those conversations, But I can't tell you how many students told me how glad they were that we were out there having those conversations, because we were giving people a place to have this exchange of ideas. And suddenly the pro-life club was respected and vandalism on the campus completely ended because we could actually engage. And they saw students changing their mind and changing their perceptions. And so I started working for Equal Rights Institute straight out of college because this became a huge passion of mine. I think that pro-choice people can change their minds if we can actually talk to them, which honestly our society seems pretty bad at doing about basically any controversial issue, talking to people.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, part of it is just having the students or whoever you're talking to understand what the issue is. You know, I sometimes say I'm pro-choice. I'm pro-choice for all human life, you know, that they should be able to make that choice themselves. And it's because I see each human being as created in God's image. But if you don't have that worldview, still most people, I think, are against these late-term abortions. Or in California now, even after birth, you know, they can't investigate or go after the death of a to find out how this child died.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in all the interactions you've had with the students, how often would you find a student that thought it was okay to take that nascent child's life right before birth?
Oh, it's very, very rare.
Right,
I mean, statistically, we know that about 72% of pro-choice people, this is according to a 2019 NPR NewsHour Marist poll, specifically trying to figure out what pro-choice people think about abortion, 72% of them would put a cutoff somewhere before birth, most of them putting the cutoff at either 3 months of pregnancy or 6 months of pregnancy.
Right.
So it is by far the majority opinion that you should not have abortion available for all 9 months of pregnancy.
Yeah.
And so that's a place of common ground that we have with pro-choice people that I can often use in a conversation to really kind of get their walls down, show us we're not that different. We have some things in common. Let's talk about what those things are.
You know, I was at a local college campus just this week, and I saw a flyer, and it was the Respect Life group, and they were having a fundraiser for a crisis pregnancy center, you know, diaper drive and all that.
Sure.
And then I looked at this flyer and I was just like, this doesn't make any sense, because it said banning abortions in the left hand corner of the flyer. It said banning abortions kills women. I'm like, why would that be on their flyer? And then I realized that somebody
had written that on the flyer.
Well, it was a sticker.
They
put that on the flyer. Like, oh, okay. And I just thought, there's no proof, no evidence at all that anybody, you know, wants a woman to die, you know, and that's part of your apologetics, right? Is that they don't consider ectopic pregnancy, or, you know, that's not an abortion, or if you're saving the mother's life. But it's misrepresented on the pro-abortion side. There are some people who are pro-abortion, you know.
Right? Oh, certainly. I've had people say to me, I consider myself pro-abortion. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll start using that label to identify you then.
Yeah.
But absolutely, there's a lot of misinformation about who pro-life people are and what they actually stand for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I work in the movement full-time. I can tell you right now, I have never met a pro-life person that doesn't think if a woman's life is actually at risk from a pregnancy, that she shouldn't be able to take medical action to save her own life.
Correct, yes.
And so the fact that there has been this kind of misinformation and misunderstanding of that pro-choice people have, really, of pro-life people, I think is really a problem for our movement. And it's one of the reasons I'm passionate about getting pro-life people out there to talk about what their beliefs are.
Right.
Because most pro-choice people have never talked to a pro-lifer. They don't know that that's what pro-life people actually believe, because they're only hearing one side of the story.
Yeah, yeah. And what you did at St. Olaf, I think, is just so commendable. When you have an event that helps women in a crisis pregnancy to protest against that just makes no it's not compassionate, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's also a lot of misconceptions about what pregnancy centers do and don't do. I mean, there's very much so been an agenda by the pro-choice lobby, so to speak, to try to paint pregnancy centers as places that yell at women, that deceive women, that provide inaccurate medical information. And if that was true, if there was a center that was actually doing that to women, I would be upset about it too. So I can understand why, if I was a pro-choice person that had been fed those lies about pregnancy centers, I would want to go protest them. The problem is they've been fed this incorrect information. Most people don't know what actually happens in a pregnancy center and the beautiful resources that they offer.
Right.
And so if we can help to turn around that narrative and have people really understand, I mean, pregnancy centers should be something everyone can get behind because it's helping women to really feel like they have a choice. We know most women who have abortions are doing it because they feel like it's their only option. I mean, no one wants to have an abortion. No one puts it in their five-year life plan. Oh, in 2024, I want to have an abortion.
Right.
That's not a thing.
Right. Yeah.
People who actually have abortions are usually doing it because they feel trapped.
Yes.
They feel like they're in a burning building and this is the only way out.
Yeah.
And so pregnancy centers are this beautiful place that offers them support and resources and services. And that should be something that even if you are a pro-choice person, you should be able to get behind because it enables those women to really feel like they do have a choice, which is what pro-choice people say that they're for. That's what their slogan is all about. We want women to have the choice. Mm-hmm. So we need everyone to understand that pregnancy centers are here.
Yeah, and I think what is really problematic is when you have, again, this is the minority who are pro-abortion, but they still maybe call themselves pro-choice, yet they are against informed consent. You know, they're against having parents involved. They're against the ultrasound. So, I mean, how is it that you're pro-choice when you want to take these choices away? And here in Minnesota, there's a judge that struck down all those laws. And that is not empowering a woman to make an informed decision, right?
I think that there's a lot of fear that those laws would, you know, essentially give pro-life people time to get in and change that woman's mind, to manipulate her into not doing it. But the reality is, if we want people to really have informed consent about what they're doing, if I put myself in the mindset of a pro-choice person that is truly that, pro-choice, then we should be able to get behind the idea that women should have all of the information and they should be making these choices for themselves, making sure they're not being coerced into it. I mean, there's many instances we've heard of abortion clinics not really turning in cases of sexual abuse that they should be turning in, especially of minors, where we're not really making sure that this woman is making this choice freely and she's not under coercion by someone. And so that should be something we should all be able to get behind.
Yeah, and a great example of that, at least here, you know, in Minnesota, is a teenager can be pressured by her boyfriend to take the abortion pill. You know, she doesn't have to see a physician or a medical provider. And, you know, it just makes them vulnerable to coercion.
Yes, I think that there is a difference between the reason why abortion is wrong and all of the things wrong with abortion. And I think you have identified what I think is the biggest thing that is one of the what's wrong with abortion category. Not the why abortion is wrong. We believe abortion is wrong because it kills an innocent human person.
Right.
But there are all these other factors that make abortion wrong additionally. And one of them is how it has really enabled the coercion and the suppression of women by our society. I mean, I think abortion in many ways is a tool of the patriarchy, if you want to call it that.
Yeah,
it makes life really easy for many men. They don't have to step up and they don't have to support her.
Yes.
We can just offer women this solution of just eliminate the problem rather than us as a society having to actually step up and support women who are in situations and create environments where you can be pregnant, create environments where you can have a family, and that is empowering to women. Instead, our society just says, nope, we're gonna eliminate the problem.
It actually, you know, makes it easier to traffic a woman.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that abortion harms women in many, many ways. And that's not why abortion is wrong, but it's a factor that our society as a whole isn't willing to recognize. The fact that abortion has hurt women, I think that the abortion industry and the way that abortion is talked about is really lying to women, telling them that this is empowering to them, when in fact the opposite is true. It's allowing society to use women.
And I've interviewed women who've had an abortion and they regret it, and they don't want other women to go through that same pain that they did. And some women, it might take them 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And then it's not something that you just do it and it's gone, right? It lingers. And for a lot of women, at some point they have to deal with it. And thank God, you know, they can receive that forgiveness and be an advocate for life.
Yes. I mean, in my line of work, I've met many women that have had abortions, and I'm so grateful for the ones mm-hmm. that have gotten that healing where they feel like they can go out and speak about it, because I think their testimony is so important.
Mm-hmm. So Emily, one of the reasons I've mentioned this before, but my grandmother came here on my father's side on the orphan train. So I just think, and it's a big part of why I'm so pro-life, if my great-grandmother had gone to a Planned Parenthood, I probably wouldn't be here. You know, I mean, she gave her child up because she, you know, wasn't able to take care of my grandmother, and abortionists often will promote abortion because there's money in it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a profit motive there. We have to recognize that the abortion industry is an industry, and they are making money off of essentially selling this product to women. And so it's another reason that I think there's a lot of really hostility anytime pro-life people try to bring up something like an informed consent law or a waiting period or anything that would really stop some doctor from getting the money quickly mm-hmm. from an abortion. Because we also know statistically, the more time that a woman takes to think about her decision, the more people choose not to go through with it.
Right. And because technology really helps also. When a woman can see that beautiful child in the womb,
mm-hmm. it gives her a connection with mm-hmm. her child in a way that you don't have. I mean, if we're being honest, early on in pregnancy, most of your experience is being sick. And that's kind of a weird experience mm-hmm. of having, like, this is my child, I love my child, when you just don't feel well all the time.
Right.
Plus, and that's just a normal pregnancy, okay? Yes. Let's add on to that now, you're in a crisis situation.
Yeah.
You're not prepared to be pregnant right now. You didn't want to be pregnant. This is a surprise. It's not a good time for your life. How much more is that going to distance you mentally from the reality that this is my child, I love my child, if you're in that kind of a mental state and you probably don't feel well?
Mm-hmm.
And so ultrasounds are an incredibly powerful way. And I'm so grateful for the technology that we have that enables so much better pictures these days for women to really get that connection that they may not have been feeling with their own pregnancy.
Yeah. So Emily, you know, I shared a little bit why I'm so involved. What is it that drives you in a sense to do what you do?
I would say that just getting to see so many pro-choice people that have never really talked to a pro-life person like me
mm-hmm.
is what drives me forward. I mean, I spend a very large percentage of my time talking to pro-choice people. I go out on college campuses. I do outreach with tons of clubs all over the country, tons of pro-life clubs now.
Right.
I deliver lectures to majority pro-choice student bodies at a variety mm-hmm. of universities. I am very used to having to talk to pro-choice people. And mm-hmm. getting to see them come away with a very different perception of who a pro-life person is. Like, they've never met someone that looks like me and who's pro-life. Now, granted, there are millions of young pro-life women.
Yes, but
they have a stereotype in their head that every pro-life person is, I'm sorry, an old white man. That's the stereotype that they have, okay?
Thank you.
There you go, that's it, I'll say it. But they also have never heard an intelligent pro-life argument before.
Mm-hmm.
They've really only heard the straw man version.
Right.
And so when they meet someone like me, who looks like them and talks like them, another young woman who is directly affected by this issue because they feel like that matters in some way. As
mm-hmm.
a young woman, I obviously have a uterus and I can get pregnant and I'm affected by these laws just as much as anyone else
is.
Yes. They are automatically more inclined to listen to what I have to say. And then they start to hear me make really good arguments that they've never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch their wall go down and then become open up to the position. I'm essentially passionate about this work because I've seen how well it works. I saw how it transformed my campus. I work directly with colleges all over the country. I've watched it transform other campuses. And I believe it's possible to change hearts and minds about abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets me up every day, that I know this can happen. And that we can build a culture of life, not just through our laws. Yes, laws are important. We need to pass pro-life laws. But if we're really going to end abortion, we have to make it unthinkable among
mm-hmm.
the citizens as well.
Yes,
and that's
yes.
where my work comes in, is I want to, one conversation at a time, break down these walls, get people
mm-hmm.
talking to each other and realizing the dignity of human life.
Right, yeah. To have a real love for the other person.
Yes.
Is what it kind of boils down to in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. It comes down to loving the person you're talking to who thinks very differently from you and helping them to see that you believe their life has value. You believe life as a whole has value.
Mm-hmm.
And that then goes to the unborn. But if we mistreat pro-choice people, not only is that strategically not going to be persuasive to them, because I am interested in what strategically is going to work, but it also undermines the point of my argument that I believe that all human life is valuable and that everyone at the very least deserves an equal right to be protected from violence.
Right.
And abortion is violence. That's pretty hard to deny.
Yeah. And I think you're of the same mindset. If you have the opportunity to meet somebody who is even directly involved in abortions, the approach to take is one of friendliness and a loving, caring approach, because you're not going to convert anybody by yelling, and most pro-life people do not do that.
Right, but, they don't.
But I'm just saying that they're stereotyped that way. And
absolutely.
And are there a couple? Probably, right? You know, there. But
stereotypes do come from somewhere, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But you're right. The vast majority of pro-life people want to be loving in a conversation with a pro-choice person, but they don't always know how. Because when you enter a controversial conversation, you kind of go into fight mode and your adrenaline goes up because you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. And then sometimes we tense up, we don't ask good questions, we can be really defensive in our language, and sure, we're not yelling at people. Mm-hmm. But if you're not prepared in how to have that conversation, you still might come across poorly because your adrenaline's up and you're just like not able to be your relaxed self.
Yes.
And so that's why we specialize in kind of training pro-life people how to do this. And we actually have two online courses that kind of cover the material that you're talking about. Our Equipped for Life course covers more of the academic conversation about abortion, like how do we engage with pro-choice arguments? Mm-hmm. And then our Sidewalk Counseling Masterclass specializes in how to talk to someone who's considering an abortion or has had an abortion.
Right.
Because that's a different kind of conversation. They're vulnerable to an abortion. Exactly. Those are two different things that I think are important for pro-life people to equip themselves with, but also just to have the basic recognition that those are different things. Mm-hmm. Pro-life arguments, how I kind of engage in an intellectual space about abortion, is different from how I'm going to listen and love someone when I'm on the sidewalk outside of an abortion facility and they're about to go in and have an abortion. Yeah. What can I say to them then? They're not interested in hearing my philosophical argument against abortion. Mm-hmm. They need to be loved and shown that you're there to support them and that they don't have to make this choice. Yeah. And we can help them find another way. And so those are two very different things. And we specialize in essentially both of them. We see them both as part of pro-life apologetics, part of reaching pro-choice people, but they're two different kinds of conversations.
Yeah, and it's so important. I met David Scotton, who, you know, the movie Life Mark was based on his true story. And his mother was going to an abortionist, and she heard a woman say, "Your baby has 10 fingers and 10 toes." And before she was about to abort David, that came to her. And then, you know, she changed her mind. Now, if that, if that woman would have chanted something negative, David wouldn't be here today.
Probably. I think that
likely, yeah.
I think that pro-life people are really well-meaning, and sometimes they might say things that are not super helpful. That's not most, but
right.
You're right.
Yeah.
There are definitely things that I've seen myself outside of abortion facilities that aren't helping someone to choose life. They are oftentimes causing someone to run faster into the clinic because they're afraid of what's being yelled at them, or they feel judged by it, as opposed to helpful, your baby has value, let us help you, we love you, we want to support you kind of language.
And I would say the vast majority of pro-life people are loving, caring, you know, they
absolutely
help at the crisis pregnancy centers. Mm-hmm. And the reason I mention abortionists is years ago, I'm old enough to have met Dr. Bernard Nathanson.
Sure.
And he, you know, he really was very pro-abortion. He helped change the laws so that they're pro-abortion. He oversaw thousands of abortions, but eventually, he had a relationship with people that helped change his heart. And I think that's what we always have to keep in mind, right?
I believe that no one is too far gone to change their mind about abortion, about anything. I mean, if we speak from a religious perspective for a second, I believe that God can forgive anyone and anyone can change.
Right.
And I think that is especially true of people that have, you know, committed abortions, have worked in the abortion industry. There are wonderful organizations that I've partnered with, and then there were none being one of them, Abby Johnson's organization, that helps abortion clinic workers to leave.
right,
and
right.
show them that there's a way out of this industry. They don't have to be stuck there. They can get healing mm-hmm. from what happened. And so I'm really grateful for those that work in those kind of organizations that are helping give people that healing and have a way out. Because there are many amazing pro-life leaders that have come out of that space. And it's horrible what happened to them and what they did in life, but I'm so glad they're here and they can advocate, in many ways advocate kind of from the inside. They have that experience, they can speak to those people more effectively because they know and they really can get in the mindset of a pro-choice person. Because I firmly believe everyone who works at an abortion clinic believes they are doing the right thing. They truly believe they're helping women. And so they're not evil. We need to help love them to a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think women who've had that pain of abortion, they are just like, it's easier for you to reach young women than it is for me, right? Because I'm an older white guy, you know? But I think women who've had that pain and they want to help other women, you know, it just makes such a difference. And I did want to ask Emily, so you know, you travel around the country, and what are some of the top apologetic advice that you would have for, you know, somebody who's watching this, like, oh, I'm pro-life, but I'm just afraid, or I don't know what to say. Now, what do you recommend?
So I think that there's a variety of pro-life organizations that you can go to, including mine, to kind of equip yourself more effectively with arguments. I think that every pro-choice person should have the opportunity to hear a good argument from a pro-life person. And that means that every pro-life person has a little bit of an obligation to equip yourself in something. Mm-hmm. Feel like you're at least aware of what kinds of pro-choice arguments there are. So that would be my biggest tip, is make sure that you at least know the kinds of pro-choice arguments that are being used today and you understand them. Because probably the biggest, I'm gonna even call it a catastrophe, that I see in my line of work in the pro-life movement is that most pro-life people don't actually understand the kinds of arguments that most pro-choice people today are making.
For example?
So right now, people say a lot of phrases about bodily autonomy. They'll say things like, my body, my choice. Mm-hmm. And most pro-life people respond by saying something like, I agree with you that you have a right to do what you want with your body, but see, the unborn's body, that's not your body. It's a different body, it has its own DNA. I've heard pro-life people say that all the time. And then the pro-choice person isn't really convinced by that, and the pro-life person walks away trying to figure out why. Why didn't that work? This is so obvious biology-wise. The problem is most pro-life people are misunderstanding the pro-choice person. Now, pro-choice people speak in vague language, and they don't sometimes fully understand their own slogans.
Right.
So we end up talking past each other. You see, what most pro-choice people mean when they say something like, my body, my choice, is they are essentially, at least for the sake of argument, conceding the point about the biology of the unborn. They're making a much better claim. They're saying something like, it actually doesn't matter if the unborn is human. Let's assume for the sake of argument that it is. Because it's inside the woman's body, the rules change. Like, your body is essentially the special zone, like your sovereign zone, and you have a right to decide what happens within this zone. So even if we assume that the unborn is a person who should have rights like you or I, you as the woman would still have rights that essentially trump the rights of the unborn. And so you see why just pointing out that the unborn has its own DNA, its own person, isn't really responding to that claim.
So how do you bridge that gap? And we only have like a minute left.
Sorry. Oh gosh. All right. So basically, I think that pro-life people need to first understand that that's what pro-choice people mean by bodily autonomy arguments, and then approach the conversation from that direction. Instead of having a conversation about what the unborn is or isn't, I have conversations about what our rights to our bodies actually mean. Is it true that you have the right to do anything you want with your own body? Like, is that a true fact? What would the world look like if you did actually have a right to do what you want with anything you want with your body? Because you don't have a right to do anything you want with your body. We all recognize this.
Right.
But it's a really appealing claim.
Sure,
and so I
sure.
understand why it makes so much sense to a pro-choice person. And so instead of talking about the unborn, you have to shift your conversation and more talk about what women's rights mean. Do we have the right to kill another person, which is what's happening in an abortion?
Exactly.
And when you approach the conversation from that direction, I've found that you reach pro-choice people more effectively because you're actually getting to the real reason they're pro-choice.
Exactly.
And that has to do with women's rights, not talking about what the unborn are or aren't.
Great, great. Well, thanks so much. I wish we could talk more, but we gotta go. Thanks a lot, Emily.
Thank you for having me today.
We'll be back again next week with the Rooney Report.